Acclaimed integrative medicine expert, Dr. Holly Lucille.
Think well, act well, be well.
Inherently you.
Hi there. Yes, this is Dr. Holly Lucille. Thank you so much for joining me on the Inherently You podcast. It's brought to you by the Institute for Natural Medicine. So today I have a repeat guest. So excited. I'm going to be chatting again with Guillermo Ruiz. He is a fourth-year naturopathic medical student at the Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine. His aim is to use his research. He's got quite a research mind to advance naturopathic medicine using an evidence-based approach. We're going to talk a lot about that, and focuses on finding evolutionary connections between our modern and traditional healthcare systems. I've really been wanting to talk to him about evidence-based medicine because I got to tell you, I hear a lot of buzz about this. We're going to talk about what that means. Can it be applied in a more whole system, natural way? And how we can get people to actually be well in here, which is what we like to do at Inherently You. Guillermo, thank you so much again for being with me.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Now, you and I have spoken many times. We did a podcast before on the benefits of an individualized patient-centered approach. I've been on your podcast. You have an incredible website called 3030strong.com. Your research mind fascinates me because, you know, I'm sort of one of these folks that is more, I think, empirical in practice. And I respect so much what you do. I have not been one. Sometimes I look at a research article and it's truly Greek to me. It would take me 7 hours to perhaps read what maybe 7 minutes you could do that in. So tell me about how you got into research.
Well, you know, I got into research in a very roundabout way. I like going on PubMed, and I like, you know, looking at articles and reading them, okay? And then I went to a convention, and Mark Sisson, it was a paleo convention, said, you know, we're old. You guys need to continue this health movement. So I started, like, internalizing this, and I said, what can I do for, A, my profession, and B, to advance this health movement to really take it to the next level. And naturally, I thought to myself, you know what? I'm going to start doing research at SCNM. Now, I had zero laboratory experience with research. I cut my teeth doing research at SCNM. And I started basically counting bacterial colonies and creating hypotheses of what was going on. And that's little by little, you know, you get this idea of what's going on here, and you advance it and you advance it. And next thing you know, you are writing papers and publishing, and now you're considered a scientist. So, there was a little bit of luck and a lot of hard work.
That's great. Well, appreciate all the work that you do, because I think that it is, it leads to many great things, especially when you're talking about this health movement. First, there's a couple of things I want to ask you. I want you to define, when you say this health movement, what does that mean to you? What does it mean to our listeners, this health movement? And also, what does evidence-based medicine mean to you? Where I want to get really into those two things.
Okay. First of all, this movement is, you know, with the information age that we're in, no longer do physicians have the last word. You know, you can go to the doctor, and sometimes the patient is going to be more educated about their health condition than the practitioner. And it can be scary for the practitioner, but I think it's so empowering, because if you know your disease process and if you know what makes you tick, when you make those suggestions, your plan is going to be better. And you can really focus on the real obstacle to cure. So secondly, what's evidence-based medicine? You know, we have been using some sort of medicine for many, many thousands of years. Traditional Chinese medicine has been around for 3,000 years. Mm-hmm. And whenever you go and get an acupuncture treatment, or you get traditional Chinese medicine remedies or nutraceuticals, what happens is that they have this history of working for different conditions. And this traditional history is written down and by If it works, you continue using it. If it doesn't work, maybe you find a better herb. And over these thousands of years, it has prevailed. Okay, and there's very little things that prevail for that long if they don't work. The problem is that with the scientific process being so new, we don't have thousands of years to make sure something works. So if we created this system where we can test things and then see scientifically if they have an effect on a particular condition. And it starts as simple as putting some bacteria on a petri dish and then putting a little bit of herbs and then see if they work or not. And then that advances to animal models. And then if the animal models continue to prove what you proved in vitro, you can test it in humans. And if that works, then you do what's called a meta-analysis. And a meta-analysis is basically looking at all of the information that has been published on this particular topic and see what the outcomes are. And, you know, if you look at this meta-analysis and you're testing thousands of articles that have been written, then you can have a pretty convincing case that the stuff that you're using works and it's not like a placebo effect or something that is related to another effect of health style, lifestyle or health.
Now, you know, it's interesting that what you say, because you were actually talking about evidence-based medicine, how the research project or process begins, and you say herb. So I'm fascinated about that, and that's what I really want to get into, because, you know, I think that I've heard the argument that sort of like conventional Western medicine with the pharmaceutical approach is the only evidence-based model of medicine that's out there. And when it comes to the clinically studied herbs that you and I, you know, in using the least invasive methods to diagnose and treat, think about that one of the complaints that, or one of the sort of, I would say, spins is that there's not much evidence out there that these really work. I hear that from colleagues all the time that are MDs. I hear that from patients sometimes that are skeptical, say, well, where's the evidence? And I would argue that there's a tremendous amount of evidence. Isn't that correct?
Well, there is, you know, but unfortunately, you know, we as human beings, and we're flawed, you know, we know that this traditional method works. You know, we know this. We wouldn't be here if traditionally this different medicines didn't work. So we are so enamored with this traditional method that sometimes we just say, we don't need the hardcore evidence because it's lengthy, it's costly, it takes forever, lots of effort.
When you're saying hardcore evidence, you're talking about randomized placebo-controlled studies, correct?
Yeah, and not only that, you know, like, randomized placebo-controlled, you know, blind, that's the top-level evidence, but also like mechanistic evidence, you know?
Sure.
For example, you know, when one of my projects is figuring out how herbs work against bacteria. Very, so specific. Now, I can give you an herb, and this herb in the monogram, in the description of this herb, is going to have more than one action. For example, you can talk about sage, and sage can be antimicrobial. It can help with dysbiosis, you know, help you digest food. You can use it to cook, you know, it tastes good. So there's so many different things that sage does. Okay. But if we want to have this evidence, you know, and if we want to play this evidence-based game, we have to take all of those parts that make the herb and analyze each one of those actions. So there's very little information on what is the actual mechanism of action of sage. So what we did at the school, we took sage and we have been testing it against all of these different bacteria. And just to see if it works against gram-positive bacteria, gram-negative bacteria, those are two families of bacteria, mm-hmm. in order to get the evidence behind this traditional herb, can present to the scientific community and say, you know, all that traditional knowledge we have, now we're backing it up with this hardcore evidence. And it takes a long time to do. Like, for example, we tested when we first started this project to see what antimicrobial properties these herbs have. We asked a ton of different naturopaths, what do you prescribe if someone comes in with strep? Okay, like strep throat when you get when you're a kid and you have a sore throat. And so they gave us hundreds of herbs. And of these hundreds of herbs, we had things like echinacea, you know, sage, you name it. But not all of those herbs are directly antimicrobial. You know, some of these herbs are immunomodulatory, meaning they help your immune system kill that bacteria.
Right.
But that's not directly antimicrobial. Right. Now, to add another layer to this, okay, we discovered that some of these herbs are not active if they are not extracted properly. For example, you can make a tea with an herb, you know, just put hot water, let it sit for a while, use it against the bacteria, and it doesn't work.
Right.
But you can take that same herb and extract it with like 75% ethanol, and now the herb is very effective against bacteria. Now, this is very important because now we know that this herb is antimicrobial, and now we know how to prepare it in order to be antimicrobial. And that's the type of evidence that we're after.
Yes. You know, this is amazing because, you know, I remember back in school, and I graduated 15 years ago, but taking pharmacology and as naturopathic doctors, our scope of practice allows us to write scripts if needed. You know, we have a therapeutic order as far as where how we think. We definitely use the least invasive methods first. More natural, plant-based, clinically studied, often botanical medicines, yes. But, you know, when I took botanical medicine and trying to learn the pharmacognosy of these plants, Guillermo, it was so much more difficult. And I have to say, it's because I think these plants are so much more complex than these medications that are out there. Because even if you look at something like curcumin, you know, I mean, usually the things like, let's say a COX-2 inhibitor, that's, you know, that's a pain reliever. It has one mechanism that it touches in your body, one thing that it does. Curcumin has over 100, right? 100 different modalities that it mechanisms that it's being able to affect in the body. And these are the things that are so fascinating to me. I mean, I think these plants are so medicinal, but they're much more complicated. And I think because of that, the research you're doing is absolutely amazing. So like you said, you can understand what extraction, what part of the plant, because hey, is it the root? Is it the rhizome? Is it the leaves? Is it the stem? Is it, what is the component, that actual medicinal component? It's fascinating to me.
Traditionally speaking, I'm going to go in a turmeric rant right now. Traditionally speaking, we started looking at turmeric. That's where curcumin is extracted from. It's a root, and people that cook with this root have lower inflammation, have less incidence of Alzheimer's, and then, you know, all these different benefits. And the only thing they do is cook with it. They put it on their dishes. They make golden milk. They add pepper. Traditionally, they knew that this was good for them.
Oh, yeah.
In our reductionistic Western approach to medicine, we want to know what makes turmeric click. So we dissect the plant, we tear it apart, we get the one molecule, and then we say, take this molecule, and we figure out years later that it's not as absorbable. So now we add phosphatidylcholine to it to make it like posomo. And then when the only thing you needed to do was eat the root. But we want to be so focused, and we want to know what that thing is, and that's curiosity, and that's good. But traditionally, if you just eat turmeric every day, you're going to get the benefits of curcumin. And
yes,
and that's mind-blowing.
It's such a great point, because now when it comes to curcumin, and this is a specialized niche talk that we could have here, I do think I've never seen such a dose-dependent, as far as the studies are concerned, botanical in my life. But it's true, I never, when I talk to my patients about the difference between turmeric, the poorly absorbable getting into the bloodstream, the curcumin and curcuminoids that have been isolated, that family of that compound in the plant that have been sort of tagged with more of the medicinal benefits. But I sort of make the analogy that it's like, turmeric, the rhizome, is the food. Curcuminoid, perhaps bound to these different absorption agencies, it's the medicine. But you don't want to stop eating the food. Food as medicine is so, so powerful. And I always encourage that. You're right. And I guess that leads me to this next subject as far as research. Is there, are there problems with it? Because a lot of times for me, in my practice, I say, sure, I have a lot of research. I have observational studies. And what I'm doing is I am observing my patients come in with a complex set of symptoms and problems that we use lifestyle medicine, we use food as medicine, we use clinical nutrition, et cetera. And guess what? They're compliant, they adhere to the program, and they start to get better. For me, that's an observational study. And guess what? I feel like it works. It's good for me. But are there some cons to this research, both in, I would say, the conventional Western reductionistic medicine, and also in the research that you're performing on these herbs?
Totally. And I can tell you two things off the bat. Things like 23andMe, that go in and they analyze your genome, and you can get really specific with like SNPs, and you can say, oh, you have a polymorphism on this. Take this supplement. Well, this stuff is coming out so fast. Technology is advancing so fast that, to me, those 23andMe things are excellent tools. Excellent tools. But if you have a decent dietary plan that covers all of your micronutrients, and if you're eating a whole foods diet, with your clinical experience, if you notice that a person might be anemic and you do things to correct that anemia, you don't need to spend $200 to get your genome analyzed. And because if you cover the bases, more than likely, all those vitamins and all those things are going to be covered. Secondly, when we do this research, we go present, and I've been to Barcelona, I've been to, A&P twice, all of these different places. And we went to an oncology conference with one of the plants that we study with really good in vitro evidence on its effectiveness against cancer. And now, this is with a tincture. So you take this plant, you put some ethanol in water, you let it sit for a week, you extract it, you use that extraction against cancer, and it works. And we have the mechanism of action of it. And we had all of these different steps, and NIH comes over and they look at our poster and they say, you know what? Your research is so exciting. Whenever you find the one molecule in this plant, we will fund you. And we're like, but the extraction works. Yeah, it does work, but we want the one molecule. So then we have spent the last year trying to come up with this molecule. So we do all these different experiments to fractionate the plant to the one constituent. And we are about 90% done with this purification of this compound. But guess what happens? Whenever you concentrate this compound, it starts killing the cell. So in its beauty, when you have this whole plant, all of the different phytochemicals that are within the plant help to buffer the toxic effects of whatever this one compound is. But you cannot make a patent medication out of thousands of compounds. It has to be the one single thing. Right. So in order for us to fit this traditional model into this evidence-based model, we have to do all these things to plants that you don't need to do, because that's how you play the game.
Yeah, so it's kind of like square peg into a round hole. It obliterates the whole science of whole system medicine. You can't reduce something that it's just not how it works. It's just not how it works. You know, and I think that also when I think about randomized placebo-controlled studies, it's gotten folks in trouble and deaths have occurred because I don't, you know, because you and I know how biochemically individualized folks are, and that in the sampling, when we do those studies, you can't predict a homogeneous population, that we're all the same. And I think that, you know, this is where I feel like some of the cases where children are put on antidepressants of sorts and they end up committing suicide or homicide because they are not metabolizing that medication how, you know, the researchers thought they should or they might. And I see this happen across the board. Don't you think that that is also this one size cookie cutter, one size fits all? You know, these are FDA approved medications. You know, quite honestly, the third now leading cause of death in the United States is the appropriate use of FDA approved prescription medications or over the counter medications. And it's been the third to fifth leading cause of death for decades now. I think that there's a gap there. There's a gap because everybody's so on to this. So, well, these are FDA approved. We went through this, you know, double blind placebo controlled study process, but we're having a lot of deaths because of it. And so when you're talking about natural medicine, I think the work that you're doing in botanical research is fascinating. I think it's only going to benefit people, but we do have to watch out that it is whole system medicine. It's not just reductionistic to just that one compound, that one herb. It is everything else that this person is doing in their environment.
And you know, double-blind placebo-controlled trials are very important. I don't want anyone listening thinking that we are against evidence. You know, evidence is king, you know. And most importantly, I want to reach out to your listeners. And as a practitioner, if we, you know, a lot of medication gets recalled, you know, and we don't know about the effects of some of these herbs. If in the future, you know, a practitioner says, you know, I used to prescribe this herb and the evidence has come out saying that it's not as effective or maybe it might be dangerous. That's not flip-flopping. That's being a scientist and changing your mind as the evidence comes out is what you want from your practitioner. You know, science is not a religion. It's not like a faith-based approach to medicine. It's looking at the best outcomes for your patients. So this is very important. And I think this is, you know, this is what's going to happen with things like cannabis. You know, it's being touted as a panacea. And unfortunately and hopefully, when we have the studies and everything comes out, we can discern what it's going to be useful for, like seizures and things like that. I think nausea and pain management. But I don't think it's going to cure everything like some forums or some blogs claim, you know. But that's not a bad thing. We need this research in order to make sure that we use these tools appropriately.
Yep, and I love it, and I love what you're doing because I think that you're saving the seducible from the seductive. Because you're right, cannabis right now, it's a big hype. There's a lot of claims, and I think we need to get very serious because I think it's an incredible medicinal plant. But with the research, we can actually use these tools appropriately in practicing individualized care with our patients. All right, thank you so much, Guillermo Ruiz. You can find him more at 3030strong.com, fourth-year medical student researching botanical medicines. Go over at iTunes, folks. We want to grow this Inherently You community because it's all about being well in here, right? In each and every individual. There's so much information out there. What is right for you? We're going to talk all about it. So go ahead, rate this podcast over on iTunes, and we're going to see you later. Thank you so much, folks. It's Dr. Holly Lucille.